Well, we're in business again, Oles.
All right.
We're talking about Mr. Oles always had kind of a warm feeling toward the product that bore his name, even though he was not associated with Real.
He had a characteristic that I think some of us inherited. I did, I know. And that is, when he would finish a job, when he'd get something up and running and it met his requirements for continued use or operation, whatever it was, and he'd sell it or walk away from it, and that was the end of it. There was nothing, no looking back at all. And that's what he did with Rio, although they did go through that proxy fight in the 30s, early 30s. But after he won that and they got straightened out, he walked away from it, and that was it. I never heard another word about it. And with Oldsmobile, it was an ongoing thing, although, of course, he had no financial interest. And he just felt that it was proper to drive an Oldsmobile around Lansing. But in Charlevoix and in Florida, he drove Chrysler products. He liked them much better. And so we all just went down there. That when we went to Florida, we knew we were going to have DeSotos and Dodges and stuff like that. But he did use Olds's here, and almost exclusively. He did have a Piercero. But he didn't very often go to the richer side of things. The Piercero, I think, that was in the 30s, and that's because they were doing a lot of traveling. Oldsmobile didn't make a car that big. And when they get ready to go to Florida or something like that, or up north, they always took the Piercero because it could hold a lot of baggage and a lot of people. So that's the way they went.
What about the little reel? That little reel that's a replica of the larger Flying Cloud, was it?
Yeah, no, that was the little touring car.
The little touring car.
And that, you know, well, when Lansing had a centennial or whatever it was, and I was at the Olds Hotel, we borrowed that car from the Rio factory and put it in the window at the coffee shop of the hotel as a display. And then the man from Alabama, was it someplace down south, when that man bought the Rio factory, he got that car with it. And he also got the one of the last of the Rio Royals.
1937?
I think so. And he took them south, and I don't know where they are now. He took them to his home in Mississippi or Alabama or wherever it was. But I understand the Rio Royal has been sold, and it's back up in Detroit, owned by an automotive engineer that collected the beautiful cars. I've met him two or three times, but I don't recall his name.
Well, this little Rio, what was the power in that?
Well, that had a little, I think it was a little, a small two-cylinder gasoline engine, horizontal, and it was just big enough to drive it. There were five of them made, but only one of them had an engine in it. And they were made for display purposes, sales gimmicks. And the one that had the engine in it was sold to Barnum Bailey Circus. So they drove it around for years and years in the circus. Then they lost sight of it, as I remember the story, and all of a sudden it turned up in a barn in Pennsylvania that a Rio dealer happened to be out making a call on some farmer, and they went into the garage to look at whatever he was turning in, and there was that little old Rio. covered with dirt, dust, straw, you name it. And so he called the factory right away, and they bought it from this guy, and it cost him $3,500 to reupholster it, clean it up, and put it back into running condition.
What was that, in the early 30s then?
No, I'd say the late 30s.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's the one that was sold to this fellow in the South, with the real. Well, wonder where these four replicas were that didn't have units.
Well, you know, like anything that you make for advertising, anything can happen to them. They may or may not be around someplace. There's no record among the Rio papers that I know of that says where they went. They may have wanted, they may have gone to California. I suppose they were spread out throughout the country, with the idea being that they would be on loan and used for display purposes. But I really don't know.
Olds, are they doing anything at MSU with the real collection out there?
Not that I know of, no. They're all in the archives. Everything is cataloged.
They've cataloged.
As I understand it, yeah.
Okay. I didn't
and this was the you're talking about the material that Niemeyer used when he wrote that book.
Well, all of the material came out of the Rio Water Car Company.
Yeah. Supposed to be all out there, and I think it's all been cataloged, but I don't know.
See, I didn't know it had been cataloged. Let me see.
Well, it may not have been, Helen. It may be just out there. Mm-hmm. I refer people out there because I frequently get calls about the Rio or about some people, some person, something like that. And I just tell them to call the archives of the Michigan State University Library. And that's the last I hear of it.
Well, speaking of people, when you said you get calls in reference to people, do you remember Reuben Shetler? Remember a name like that, connection with Mr. Olds?
No.
Okay.
No, that the name is very similar, if not the same, to the guy that runs that very fine grocery store out there at Trowbridge intersection. But maybe I'm mispronouncing his name.
Oh, Goodrich's?
No, it's Goodrich's store, yeah.
Oh, I see.
But it just seems to me as though Shepler or Shetler, something like that, was the owner, yeah.
What about, you know, when we were looking at those home movies, you mentioned Wallace, that was Mr. Olds' brother.
Mm-hmm.
And was there a Schuyler Olds, too? S-C-H-U-Y-L-E-R?
Well, that name is familiar. They had one brother that went west, and I think they sort of lost track of him, except every now and then he would surface. And the last time I heard about the brother was a letter from somebody else in Fort Worth at a nursing home that there was an old man there. I've got it down in the office, but I can't put names to it right now, that claimed he was Ari Old's brother. And it didn't ring a bell with any of us up here. But we've tried to keep all those inquiries and things like that. But I do know now one of the brothers was the general sales manager for the St. Louis, Missouri area. But I don't know whether it was Wallace or not.
For the dealership? Selling reels?
Either reels or Oldsmobiles. But...
how many brothers were there of Mr. Olds?
Well, I think there were four, and then Aunt Sade, Sarah.
Ari Olds, Aunt Sade, Wallace, then...
And I think there were two others.
Two others. One may have been Schuyler, and then another.
Yeah, and I would have to look it up. As I said, I don't remember all these funny little things that happen to families.
Mm-hmm.
My mind travels in different directions, I guess.
Well, of course, there's a number of generations between two, and Mr. Rolls passed away in 1950.
That's right. Now, you might want to check with Sue Darnton, She would know about Wallace. And maybe about a lot of the others.
Now, how would that connection come in?
Well, she was my second cousin, you see. Her grandfather was my grandfather's brother.
So, Sue Darnton's father was... What was...
Sue Darnton's father was... Walters. Walters. She was a Walters.
Okay.
And her mother, though, was Wallace's daughter.
Let's see here now. Wallace was a brother of R.E.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I don't recall. Edis. Edis Walters.
Edis Walters was
mm-hmm.
Sue Darnton's mother.
Mother.
And now let me see, how do we get Walters in there?
Well, because Walters was Sue's father, but I don't know where he came from.
Okay.
And I don't remember his first name.
Right now, Wallace was the brother of R.E. Olds.
Mm-hmm.
And Wallace had a daughter, Edis, who married a Walters.
That's right.
And Edis.
Phil Walters.
Phil Walters. And Sue Darnton.
Was their daughter.
Okay. I'm making a note here. The other day when we were looking at the home movies, seems to me there was a Pruden name. There's a family connection there too, I think.
Well, not with our family.
Not with yours.
I was trying to identify the little blonde-headed boy that ran around on the beach, and that was Keith Pattengill. And then his mother appeared, and I was at a loss for her name because she looked so much like my Aunt Frances, but she was not. It later came to me that was Edwina Pattengill. And Edwina was a Pruden.
Oh.
So that's where that came in.
Okay. Now, your Aunt Frances, how old was she an aunt to you?
Well, my father's sister.
That was the one daughter.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very fine.
Mm-hmm. It gets kind of scrambled.
So really, there are two brothers of Mr. Olds that one really doesn't know about?
Well, that I didn't know about. I know they're in these books.
Okay.
But beyond that, I can't tell you much about them.
But now, Ole's, Woody Rowe is married.
Mm-hmm.
To?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Carr.
Carr.
Dr. Carr's daughter.
Okay, and they had what children?
They had Linda, and a son, J. Woody Jr.
Okay.
Who just got married.
Oh, okay. Then I'll follow that up with Woody.
Yeah.
Okay, now you are married to?
Doris. Berkey.
Berkey. And you have your children?
Well, I have. This is a long story. If you start with me, that my first wife was Barbara Hughes,
okay.
Who is now Barbara Hughes. At that time, Barbara Pyatt, Pyatt Products here in Lansing.
Pyatt Products? What did they do?
And they made water heaters and oil furnace equipment and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, let's see, that was Barbara. And then she married Harvey Hughes.
Now, you were married in 37?
37.
Okay.
And then that marriage didn't work out, so we were divorced. I went to Texas. And in 43, I married Faye Powers, a Texas girl, Houston girl.
Okay.
We had, Barbara and I had no children.
Okay.
But with Faye, we had two children. Amanda Jane Anderson and
Amanda Jane, using your grandmother's.
Yeah, both. Well, Meta, my grandmother, and Jane, using Faye's mother's name, her grandmother, I guess.
Meta Jane.
And Rio Jr., Ariel's Anderson Jr.
Oh.
And he goes by the name of Rio.
Okay. Now they were born. Right, about around the close of the war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Meta has no children. She's not married. Rio had two children, Ben and Heather, by his first wife, who died. You know, I'm getting overloaded here.
Well, that's...
Anyway, then he remarried Sally, to whom he's married now.
Uh-huh.
And Sally came equipped with three children.
Oh.
So they had a grandchild. So he's one, Rio is one generation ahead of me. But in any event, they now have five. I don't think there was any official adoption amongst them. Now, that takes care of that group. So, Faye, that takes care of Faye's end of it, chapter. Then, we were divorced in 48, I think, or 9, 48, 49. And Doris and I were married in 50. And she had one daughter, Diane, whom I have adopted. And between Doris and myself, we had two other daughters, Deborah and Katrina.
Now, Doris was who before she?
Well, Doris was Davis, but her maiden name was Berkey.
Okay.
Then during the war, she married Dick Davis, and then that didn't work out. But in the meantime, they had Diane.
Mm-hmm.
So Doris had one child when I met her. And that's essentially where we are right now, I think.
So, and with the adoption of Doris's daughter, you have three daughters.
Three. Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Are they locally here now?
No, Diane is, but Debbie lives in Dublin, Ohio, outside of Columbus. And Katrina lives in Newton, Massachusetts, outside of Boston. And we just live here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's the lineage to date.
I see. Okay.
Now, Diane has one daughter, Emily, and Debbie has two sons, Matthew and Gregory. But that's the end of the whole thing as of today. Who knows what next year will bring?
Life moves right along.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to get into your personal life, but I wanted to kind of get people straightened in my mind.
Yeah, it's difficult, Helen, because, see, I've been married 3 times. And the first one, no children. The second one, 2 children. And the third one, 2 children. But my third wife has 1 child, whom I've adopted, so we have 3. Mm-hmm. And without getting mixed up in the names again, it's really, that's about it.
Okay. It tends to more girls than boys, doesn't it?
Well, I guess. Yeah, although my own grandchildren, 2 boys, as opposed to 1 girl.
Oh, yes.
So,
Now, Meta and Mr. Rolls had just the 2 daughters. Did they have any other children?
They had 1 other who was stillborn, I think stillborn. And I think they had one that lived just a few days. Now, I had a daughter, I had a sister after Peggy, my present sister, who only lived a few days. So there were 3 of us.
I see.
But those are the ones that didn't make it, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes little people in those days didn't. They didn't know as much about keeping the little ones alive as they do now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Why didn't the management of the Rio work out in the 1930s? What went wrong there?
Well, the story that I always hear, and why did they have the proxy fight? The story I have always heard was that Richard Scott, who was the president at the time, and a very able man, he did a good job running the company, but he let his personal beliefs interfere. And you remember about that time why they repealed Prohibition. And as soon as it was repealed, the orders came in just like an avalanche for beer trucks. But he was a teetotaler. He was against it. He didn't like liquor in any form, shape, or manner, and he refused to make them. And if he knew they were going for that purpose, they wouldn't make them. They wouldn't fill the order. Now, I have never seen that in writing. I really don't know how true it is, or even if it's just partially true. But that's the story that I've always heard. So the board of directors decided they needed a new man, but Scott by that time had enough stock and influence that they ended up in a proxy fight, which he lost. And Mr. Rolls won and went back in there and tried to turn the company around. And I guess he did until World War... Well, no, they were making trucks in World War II. Sure.
Well, when did Mr. Olds put Mr. Scott in the Rio? I mean, he said Mr. Scott was the chief operating officer.
CEO. Well, I would have to say in the 20s somewhere, because Grandpa became involved in Hill Diesel and in many other things, and the Florida real estate boom and bust, the hotel business in
the
one way.
The reason for getting a local manager was to relieve him so he could get other interests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now you mentioned the Florida boom and bust. Do you know, can you tell us something about Oldsmar?
Well, not a great deal, except that it is still there. It was just about 50 years ahead of its time, because Grandpa has a history of getting into things too soon, and that was one of them. And they were going to—they had a post office and a bank, and you know, all the things that a little village would have as it wanted to start to grow. Plus, lots and lots and lots of land. Unfortunately, the land was practically at sea level. And it was at the north end of the Tampa Bay, so when they got real good high water, the land had a tendency to disappear. And he didn't know it at the time, but that's essentially what happened. So about that time, why, the real estate market fell in Florida anyway, so it was just another casualty. But the idea was that he would be developing that as we now think of retirement homes, except that was so early that it was only a concept, and he never had the opportunity to do anything with it.
He was really ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he started Olds Hall over in Daytona Beach for retired missionaries and ministers. And the concept there was that they had to be able to pay a little bit towards their own keep. They had to be ambulatory. It wasn't going to be an infirmary or anything like that. But to those who had retired from the church or the field or whatever it happened to be, a church, not the church, but a church.
Any denomination.
Any denomination. They could come in there. It was small. I've forgotten exactly how many people they could accommodate. It was less than 100 when he started, certainly. And he bought an old defunct hotel and built it up and restored it. I served on the board down there. As a matter of fact, I was the chairman when we made the recommendation to merge Olds Hall with the Lutheran retirement system, because, frankly, the government was too much competition, the United States government. And they would put up these beautiful buildings down there and let people move in practically scot-free, and they had no responsibility, just a matter of moving in. Well, we couldn't compete. So we decided to turn it over to the Lutheran people, and they have carried on that philosophy and done a good job.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. But there again, you see, he was, now that was before the war. That started in 1940, I guess, somewhere back there. Mm-hmm. Now he was so far ahead of his time there. And it was just, he had a unique ability to read the handwriting on the wall. When something wasn't going to work, he could see it. And then he either got out or fixed it.
Do you think that he minded, I'm going to digress here a minute, leaving the Olds Motor Works and beginning a new company?
I think it all, from what I can read, I never heard him talk about that, but from what I can read, I think it was just an orderly transition. I think that he left Olds because they voted him out, frankly, and there's no doubt but what he would be hurt emotionally on the thing. But almost in the next breath, people from Lansing with financing came along, and said, let's build another car. What do you think it ought to be? So that I really haven't checked the dates, but I have a sneaking idea that they were less than a year apart.
You're right.
And it was just a transition that he had the momentum built up, and Lansing took advantage of it, and boy, it took off.
Were you ever in his garage, his shops, when he was experimenting on something?
Only one, down at Hill's Diesel. And that's when he was experimenting with a three-cylinder generator with a unique design that, instead of valves, it used ports. And that was for the Navy in World War II. It did run. Whether they ever put it in production, I don't know.
What were they going to use it for?
Yeah, electrical generator.
Okay.
And it was something quite new. It had a tiered cylinder, a piston. And it was worked out in such a way that when it came down, some of the ports closed and others opened. And then on the way up, the reverse happened. And I saw it running down there.
So you believe he had that?
I think he patented it, but I really don't know. In those days, that was just, from my standpoint, it was something that he was interested in. He asked me down to take a look at it, so we went. But it didn't mean that much to me. I was not that much oriented to the mechanical world, shall we say. Now, if it had been something that had to do with an airplane, that would have been different, because I was ready for that. But it was wartime, you know, and we had a lot of other things to think about.
Was he interested in flying?
He was interested in it, but not to the point where he would do it very often. But he was very, very remarkable. He came over to Houston one day, and I mean that quite literally. I met him at the station. In those days, most of us took the train. He came over from Daytona Beach. It was January, February. I met him at the station at 7:30 in the morning, and Mother was visiting me at the time. He wanted to, of course, we had breakfast. Then he wanted to see what this town was like, and I spent the morning driving him around out to the ship channel, the basin, and shipping basin, the oil refineries, plus some of the other things downtown, the big buildings. We had lunch, and then in the afternoon we went out to the airport, and he saw the planes that I was flying. And interestingly enough, he stood right there and looked at him, and he said, you know, if you would close up these wheel wells, you'd streamline the airplane a little bit more. Eventually, that happened. And he had some other suggestions that were obvious to him, but of course not to us. And they all appeared on later models. But then in the afternoon, we went back to the hotel where Mother was staying and visited for a while, and I put him on the train that night back to Daytona Beach. He had seen Houston. He knew more about it than I did. I lived there. But that was typical. Absolutely typical of him. Whether he got the information from reading ahead of time or later or just by osmosis, I don't know. But he had seen the city. That's all he needed. To the best of my knowledge, he never came back.
But he had property in the South, too, didn't he?
Not in Texas.
I see.
And at that time, I don't think he had any in Louisiana or any place over there. did in Florida, of course, but...
Other than Oldsmar, he had other properties?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What kind of property?
Well, I'm told that he had an orange grove at one time and various speculative things. I call them speculative because I'm looking at it in the past tense. But at the time he had it, he probably thought they were going to take off and go.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Chicago? We've heard that he had real estate buildings in Chicago.
Well, I don't know about Chicago. I know he had some in Kansas City, and I think St. Louis, because Woody went down there. But this is a good place, and of course in Detroit. But this is a good place to ask Woody, mm-hmm. because he was in the office. He knew about those things.
Mentioned when we were looking at those Olds family films that Mr. Olds on that one tour was, I think, to France, that had to leave the tour and return home.
That's right.
Do you remember why he had to do that?
Well, they were running into problems with the Michigan National Tower. And they started to build it, and so he wanted to get home to straighten them out and see just what was going on.
Now that was prior to 1929, or close to there.
That's right.
28, perhaps.
Yeah, and so he took the boat back, and you always figured time in those days. You know, you had to have a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So he took the boat back, and then we came back probably. 3 weeks later.
When did he buy that property where the bank is?
I don't really know. It started out to be a theater because I can remember the cement floor was already down and we used it as a parking lot. Because you could drive in from Allegan, and you get down just the way you would in a theater like that, and then go into parking slots on either side, painted on the floor. So the floor of the theater was there. The ramp type effect was already there. So they had to get that out of there before they could build the building.
Oh.
But. Yeah, I remember that. It was going to be a theater and then it never materialized. But I've heard a lot of different stories about how the land was acquired, but I really don't know. And lots of times, you know, post-mortem on things like that, I frequently felt as though I was putting out brush fires, but I never knew what started them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Well, now he was also involved as the operating officer at Rio at that time, or was Scott in then?
No, I'm pretty sure Scott was there.
So it would have been the early 20s maybe that Scott went in?
Originally, probably so.
Okay. Then after Mr. Scott was out, in this proxy fight, and Mr. Olds took over the Rio. How long was Mr. Olds in Rio before it was sold?
Well, I don't think he waited until it was sold. I think he got in there and turned it around.
I see.
And or started turning it around, and then got out when they got what he thought was good management.
So he had really left before they ceased building cars.
Yeah, as far as I know, he did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in the later years, was he still planning vacations and the get-togethers where all try to keep the family together? And
yeah, he was. He He took my mother and father, when I say he took them, I think he organized the trip, but I don't know who paid for it. My mother and father and Bun and Blondie Rowe to Mexico, and sometimes to the southwestern part of the United States, but Arizona and New Mexico, you know, were not that popular in those days, and it was kind of primitive country out there. After all, they'd only been admitted to the Union since 1912, and the trains went through with Santa Fe. We used to go out on that, but still, it was kind of sketchy. So it was more of an adventure, I guess, to go to New Orleans and then take the boat across to Veracruz, or however they went to Mexico. But I know in 25, he and my grandmother went around the world with a bunch of their friends, but they were contemporaries. He didn't take the family. But when it was time to go to Florida, I know we all went to Florida.
Now, what time of year was that, maybe? No,
that would be in January, yeah. Because I know it was interesting, Helen, when we get ready to go, I remember he would rent a whole Pullman car. But he got the entire family, including the Abels and the Wallaces and those people on board. You know, those Pullman cars were pretty big in those days.
Mm-hmm. No, those were family friends.
Yeah. Well, no, they were part of the family itself.
Oh, I see.
So collectively, he'd get the whole family on board and off we'd go.
How were you related to the Abels?
Through my grandmother. And I can't tell you.
Grandmother, would that be Anderson or?
No, Olds. Yeah.
And the Wallace is the same?
Same thing, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my grandparents Anderson didn't figure into much of our traveling here in the East.
Okay.
When we went west, that was a whole different ball game. But in the East, it was really an Eastern contingent.
Did you have extra help from your folks?
At home?
Maids or to look after the children or cooks? Or?
We had a cook that was with us for years and years by the name of Clara Coates. And she had either a son or a son-in-law by the name of Offenauer, who had a very fine radio shop here in town. I guess they're still here, I really don't know. But Clara was just a gem, and she was there year in, year out, day in, day out. Fantastic cook, and it didn't make any difference whether it was for one person or 20. She'd come up with excellent food. But they also had, Mother and Dad also had a maid that did the housework and helped wherever, you know, she could. In the very early days, Mother planned all the meals, because we still have those menus, and looked up recipes and did the paperwork. But she also did the shopping. And of course, you know, we could, in those days, they had two telephone lines here in town. And there was the Central, and then there was the Bell. And it depended on which grocery store you wanted to talk to.
Oh, goodness.
But they had home delivery.
Way out there?
Well, no, this is when we lived down on Townsend Street. When we lived out on the farm in the big house, she had a driver, chauffeur, but still a cook, and a maid. And then at the gatehouse, she had Joe Garippo, who's still alive, I guess he's in his 90s now, as the gardener. And he came by way of friends from Buffalo, Maury Thorne. And in Buffalo, Joe worked for Pierce Arrow. So he had an automotive background, so to speak.
When did your folks move into the large farm?
About 32.
About
32. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by that time, your grandparents were living on the corner of Maine and Washington?
Well, they had always lived there.
As far as you can remember, that's your first recollection?
Yeah. That house was built, and they moved into it in 19. Well, it was started in 1902, and they moved in 1904.
Okay.
So they always lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived at the corner of St. Joe and Townsend in that, well, it's now a vacant lot.
Did you tell me earlier that that's where the McLaughlin Hospital
yeah.
used to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
619 Townsend.
619 Townsend,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that wasn't too far from your grandparents.
No, it was roughly two blocks. And then the Rose lived another block down St. Joe at 404 West St. Joe.
Well, that would be one block farther west.
Yeah, and that is now where the State Chamber office building is.
Oh, on the corner there of Walnut and
yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Later was a nursing home.
Well, ours was.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Rose was too. The Rose Row home. Yes, I remember that now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there again, why, that's would be up to Woody's.
Yes, I can see
yeah.
there's quite a number of questions that are forming in my mind that I can talk with Woody about. And what does he like to be called? I mean, I've met him once.
Well, I'd call him Woody. Everybody does.
Do
oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because he has the one initial, J, for John, but he only uses that when he's signing his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then J. Woodward Rowe, but he goes by Woody, and everybody knows. I think that'd be the best way to go.
All right, thank you. Wolves, what are your personal feelings about your grandfather as a man and as an inventor, about Mr. Wolves? Is there some way you'd like to sum him up in your own personal feeling as his grandson?
Well, I would just say he was a very warm individual. He had an awful lot of get up and get, as they used to say. He was a traveling salesman, let's face it. He was out on the road peddling automobiles when they were practically handmade. So he knew what it was like to be out there in rough and tumble of the competitive world. But he also liked to stay somewhat in the background because he was not one for pushing his product, but not himself. And he was religious, but again, we didn't touch upon that particularly, but he had his own code of ethics, which I don't think anybody could fault. He did not smoke, he did not drink until the very last year in his life, and then it was only on doctor's recommendation. But at the same time, he had owned in his lifetime a couple of bars that were must have been profitable, or he wouldn't have owned them. I don't think he went out to buy them. I think he accidentally ended up with them.
They weren't local.
No, not local. And excellent businessman. He had an intuitive sense that invariably was good. Wonderful visualizing a given situation, not only situation among people, but mechanical. And, well, Helen, you've seen that that exhibit down at the museum of the bronze forward and reverse gears down there that Bob Huxtable, I think, brought down. Well, prior to that time, nobody had ever thought of that. They knew they wanted to get the car to go backwards, but they didn't know how to do it. But he would visualize that until finally, by golly, he and a couple other engineers, probably I'd call them engineers, mechanics, visualized that and built one, and as a result, why, we can now back up when we want to. But prior to that time, it didn't exist. So there were a lot of things, you see, that he could visualize and actually create that just weren't there before. That's about all I can tell you on him. But he was warm, he was generous, but you did things the right way or you didn't do them at all.
Did he keep in touch with Frank Clark, the carriage builder?
I really don't know. I know him by name, of course, but I really don't know. Those things all happened, you know, before my time.
Yes, yes.
Even though they might have lived and been alive, I don't ever remember meeting them.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add to this interview, Olds?
No, it's been interesting. I haven't gone down these paths in my memory for years and years and years.
I hope it's been fun to do that.
Yeah, it has been fun. There's no question about it. I'm just amazed at the names that I could remember, because I haven't thought of those people in a long time.
Done a good job.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your signing the interview agreement, too, because this is a historic document that we're making, and it's very meaningful to us. It'll be a wonderful addition to the Oldsmobile History Center.
Well, you see, my memories go off in a different direction than probably Woody's will, because Woody was closer to the family all the way through, especially in the office. And mine go off in different ways. Woody went away to school, as did I, and he went overseas in World War II. I just went to Texas, but we are two different people, and he emphasized one side, and I just happened to go along with the other side. So you'll get a whole different ball game from him.
Well, I appreciate your suggestion that he will be willing, and I will.
Well, I think so.
Should I call him direct? Can I do that? Would that be all right? Or do you want to talk with him first?
Why don't I contact him first?
Okay.
And tell him what it's all about, and that you would appreciate interviewing him much the same way we did here.
Yes, and he can come here, or we can go down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seemed to work out better for you to come here, because we had your films here.
Yeah.
And you were able to provide the identification.
Mm-hmm.
But where we do it is no problem. It's just nice to have it's quiet and no interruptions.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah. Well, let me approach him first, then I'll call you, and you can then set up a time and all that.
I'd appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think maybe we've covered all of our territory here, and...
Well, if you think of something else, give me a call.
Thank you.
Time staggers on, you know, and little things float to the surface that you don't always see.
That's true. Sometimes later things come, and
yeah.
If you think of something, please call me, because we can certainly work together to preserve history that should have been recorded a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm going to shut our tape off here.